Hey, it's Antoinette, and welcome to another episode of the Hormone Heartbeat podcast. In today's episode, I interview Nora Pope and Dr. Jessica Liu, and they're both the co-founders of Fertility Continuing Education Accredited Webinars. And what they do is they teach other healthcare professionals about key topics that we are going to dive into deeply today. And those are topics such as understanding how to decode your menstrual cycle charts in order to determine if you have an underlying condition or any abnormalities that need to be addressed in order to optimize your fertility. And some of those things could include knowing if you have low progesterone and what are the signs of that, knowing what could be going on if you don't produce enough cervical mucus or if you produce too much. So those are the kind of topics that we're going to dive into today. And I'm so excited that we get this opportunity to interview these experts.
Welcome to the Hormone Heartbeat Podcast, a podcast about female empowerment through menstrual cycle health, the true heartbeat of your hormone status. With each episode, we'll explore the foundations of hormone health with science, soulful and heartfelt conversations, a dash of sass and feminine pizzazz. Our dream is to arm you with exactly what you need to be an unstoppable female force, ready to achieve all that your heart desires and embrace your inner goddess. And here's your host, naturopathic doctor, birth doula, fertility awareness educator, hormone enthusiast, and lover of pretty things, Antoinette Falco.
Welcome, Jessica and Nora. It is so amazing to have you guys here. I am just blown away by getting to have the opportunity to interview you both and hear all of your expert information on today's episode. So thanks for being here.
Thank you so much. We're excited to be here too.
So let's get some introductions underway. I want you to introduce yourself. Tell me a bit about your stories and what led you to doing the work that you do.
Okay, so this is Nora Pope, and I've been a fertility awareness advocate since 1994. And I started my studies at the Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine in 1998. And back then, I was the only woman in the classroom who used cycle charting for fertility awareness and body literacy. And I was the only woman in the room who could say with certainty, no, today is not a day of fertility. Yes, today is a day of fertility. I was the only woman in the classroom who actually did cycle charting. And now I would say there has been an explosion in interest. So we're building on that. And then last year with Dr. Jessica Liu, naturopathic doctor, I started a company called Fertility CE to get this information out to healthcare professionals, because it is so powerful at helping treat women's health and especially help cure infertility. So that's a bit about me.
And I've been a naturopathic doctor in Mississauga, Ontario for the last over 15 years. And I have a wonderful integrative fertility care team that we all work together. And that's, you know, this has been my passion for so many years, probably because of my own hormonal quagmire that I went through my 20s and 30s that resulted in I felt like a guinea pig. You know, I had crazy hormonal cystic acne, terrible dysmenorrhea. I remember being in labor with my first son. I had my first child. It was a home birth. And when I was 7 centimeters dilated, I was still eating cookies because my menstrual cramping pain was no different than 7 centimeters dilation labor pain. That's how bad it was. It had me writhing on the floor. And so I was put on all manner of medications, antibiotics, drugs, Accutane, several different hormonal birth control pills, all which threw my whole hormonal system into complete disarray. And then it was through working with my intern at the Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine when I was studying, she fixed me. And that was where it started. And so that's where I started working with women with hormonal challenges and fertility. And it just kind of, it went on from there.
Oh, it's such a common theme I hear with a lot of the experts that I interview, right? And it's like you learn it firsthand, which I mean, I know at the time was not ideal, but now you have like the knowledge you learned in school. Plus you have that internal fire and passion that you went through it and you overcame it and you really bring that to women, which I'm sure they can appreciate.
For sure. I have been there. When a woman says, I am in pain every month, I'm like, I know, sister friend, I know where you've been.
Yeah, I've been there. Yeah. Okay. So maybe Jessica, you can answer this question. So you talk a lot about how you run an integrative practice, fertility practice. So can you share with our listeners, what does truly holistic fertility care, what does it look like?
So, you know, beyond the labs, there's so much more to it than that. For me, when I think big picture, when I have a woman in my office, 90% of the time, she's already been thinking about and stressing about and having anxiety attacks about her fertility for quite some time. I had a woman the other day that, you know, we were just talking about cervical fluid and she just broke down in tears because in her head, there was something wrong with her. So part of the work that we're doing is we're looking to treat the underlying condition. We're looking to put in place the different people that can help with stress management, that can help with diet, that can help with movement, and then integrate the labs. And our passion, Nora and I, is to really use cycle charting as a roadmap to body literacy, and then to use that to guide diagnostic tools as well as treatment strategies so that there's no guesswork. And a woman becomes the primary driver of that in terms of how she can become empowered in this process, right? So she's learning about her body and she's recognizing that there's nuances to it all. It's not just sort of a black and white binary thing. It's, you know, there's days where she's going to be a little more fertile, days where she's a little bit less fertile, but those days, we're going to explain, have equal value in a woman's cycle. Mm-hmm. So that's my idea of holistic care. And it works really well when you've got other types of practitioners who understand women's physiology, and again, we can all work together.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to say, Antoinette, that I'm so happy you're taking the Justice course and you're finishing it, because we need more naturopathic doctors who understand body literacy. And that's mm-hmm. a term that I love. It was coined by Laura Wurschler, and she's a good friend of the founder of the Justice College, Geraldine Matus. Mm-hmm. And so body literacy is a springboard to be a better doctor, in my view. Mm-hmm. And in terms of what's holistic fertility care, the options right now are very rigid. You have cramps and you're a teenager, go on the pill, 28-day model. Oh, you have subfertility, you haven't gotten pregnant in the last 6 months. Okay, we're going to do a 28-day IVF cycle. That's all there is. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, as you learn cycle charting, a healthy cycle can be as short as 24 days, 22 days, and as long as 35 days. So there's diversity in a woman's cycle. It's not scary. It's not unhealthy. It's actually very healthy. And we want to really teach this body literacy of what are the healthy biomarkers that you're looking for and what's missing and how do you restore that health so those healthy biomarkers emerge mm-hmm. and then you can have a pain-free period mm-hmm. or full-term pregnancy. So there we go. That's what, for me, that's what it looks like.
Yeah. And I think naturopathic doctors are so poised to be the experts in unexplained infertility, right? Because I'm sure you feel the same way, Antoinette, is that it's not a diagnosis. It's they haven't explored it yet.
It's like, we don't know what's wrong. Let's just put you in this category that we feel better about ourselves because we just put you in, we put you in a box.
It's so disempowering for a patient to say, okay, we're just going to then go down this line of therapy without really knowing what's the reason for it. Mm. Other than we don't have an answer. Here, let's funnel you down this path. That's not good enough for me.
No, definitely not. So this leads me to my next question about like lab tests. I imagine that there's a lot, I know there's a lot missing from conventional fertility care. Can you guys share some of the like common mm-hmm. tests that maybe are missed?
Well, sure. There are common tests that are given, but they're given improperly. A lot of women are given blood tests for day three of the cycle. So that's a no-brainer. 1, 2, 3 of your bleed. But then they're told to get tests done on day 21 of their cycle. And that assumes that they have a 28-day cycle. They ovulated on day 14. And so 7 plus 14 is 21. And that's the so-called mid-luteal testing, which is very, very important because that shows these optimal levels of hormones for estrogen and progesterone post-ovulation. They're at their zenith. And the problem is not everyone ovulates on day 14. And so with cycle charting, we teach our students when is that peak day, when is that ovulation day? And that is the springboard for, mid-luteal testing. Mm-hmm. And so then what's really missing is an appreciation of white flow or cervical fluid. And that's where the body literacy comes in. You chart your cycle. You want those 5 days of red flow. You want those 5 days of white flow. And when that white flow ends, boom, that's your peak day. And then you test on peak plus 7. So those are basic important tests. And then again, using the white flow, that's when you want to do a vaginal ultrasound series. It's not, oh, just go in on day 9. What if you have a long cycle and your white flow starts on day, 13, 14, 15, you want to go in later? Or what if you have a short cycle? Maybe your white flow starts on day 5. You want to go in earlier. So first of all, you need to time the test properly in sync with the woman's cycle. And that's a big part of our expertise that we're sharing with our students around the world.
And the other thing too, that I think that the reference ranges need to be reevaluated perhaps, because there's a difference between pathology and what you might see and optimization. And unfortunately in blood, hormones are sort of tightly controlled, right? Because the body, they're so powerful, they're in parts per million or, even smaller amounts in the bloodstream. That's how they're measured. But they shouldn't be just left willy-nilly to go wherever they want. So when they're traveling in the bloodstream, they're sort of tightly controlled. And that doesn't always reflect what's happening in the tissue. You could have a basketball-sized fibroid in your uterus and have normal estrogen, right? And so we're looking for slightly out of the optimal range levels, for instance, thyroid hormones, we're going to look at things with a tighter lens. Mm-hmm. Iron levels, the number of times I've seen women say, mm-hmm. My doctor said my iron level is fine. Well, did they test iron? No, they just did a hemoglobin. Okay, but that's not the same. Your body can coast along remarkably well, sort of, but if you have a woman who's like, I'm dizzy all the time when I get up too fast, I'm bleeding so much, I just have no energy during my period, and their hemoglobin looks okay, but their ferritin is a 5, and the range is like 5 to 272 in Ontario. What's normal? So for most menstruating women to feel half normal, their ferritin should be at least a 60 or to an 80. And most women are hovering around in their 20s and their doctors are saying, that's fine. No, it's not. It's not fine. They don't feel good. So if they don't feel good, how on earth is their body going to mount the energy to keep making these wonderful hormones? Mm-hmm. Right. So that's sort of a narrower lens that we're going to look at in our holistic view.
Yeah, such a good point. And also, Nora, I love that you mentioned about using the chart, your menstrual cycle charts, as a diagnostic tool, because I think that is also important to think, well, our estrogen and progesterone hormones, those are cyclical, right? And we go in there and we take a test on one specific day, but like the next day could be completely different. And if you use your fertile signs, you're going to get way more information than you would from that blood test. So yeah, this is fantastic. Another reason why every woman should be charting, not even if you're trying to get pregnant or not, just learn about your body, learn about your health through charting.
You got it, Pontiac.
Yeah, exactly.
Like I never had children, but when I only learned about cycle charting in my 30s, and I thought, oh my God, this is amazing information. Yeah. So I could predict my next period. And I just felt I had more control over my life, and I took everything in stride. So I always felt blue on peak plus one. I don't know what it was. I always felt blue on that day. And then, so I was prepared. So, a little more TLC that day and have a nice latte with a girlfriend. And then you could coast along. But so for me, it was just good information.
Yeah. Even from the standpoint now, I'm seeing some amazing fitness coaches out there using the power of a woman's chart. Like when you're in your pre-ovulatory estrogen phase, that's when you can actually safely lift heavier. For instance, you feel more confident, you feel more energy, you feel stronger and more in your body. And in your post-luteal phase is where you want to maybe kick in some yin yoga and avoid heavy lifting. You can actually injure yourself more. Mm-hmm. So there's so much power because we're cyclical beings as women. Mm-hmm. Men are too, but in a different way, but we are very, very much cyclical beings. And so to be able to empower yourself with that knowledge means that you can be more effective in the things that you want to do. You can be more self-compassionate mm-hmm. at those times of the month where you're not feeling so great. And so to spin it from being a negative to, this is a reminder to me to kick in more self-care.
Yeah, it's a good point. Just last week, I was talking to a patient of mine and she was a mom of two. She was telling me about how hard COVID was. And she's like, I had my 30 minutes and I just wanted to do a workout. And so I went with the high intensity interval training. She's like, but I felt horrible after that. And I'm like, I understand, like, time is precious. You want to make the most of your workouts, but then just having the conversation around like timing her workouts based on where she is in her cycle actually can give her more energy. So she's able to do more of the mom things that she wants to be doing. Right.
Right. Right. Instead of using it all up in that 30 minutes. Right?
Exactly. Exactly. So we're talking about menstrual cycles as diagnostic tools. Can you guys give me an example or a couple of examples of what you might see in a cycle chart to what that would mean maybe about a woman's reproductive health or fertility?
Yeah. So we like to talk about the rule of five. We want to make it an easy learning tool. So 5 days of bleed, that shows that you had good hormones in the previous cycle. So, and you want the color to be red and burgundy, not brown or black. You want 5 days of white flow, because what's that showing is that before ovulation, the follicle, the dominant follicle in your ovary is growing and it's developing a critical mass. The surface area is large enough to start producing estrogen. That estrogen is flowing in the blood out of the ovary throughout the body. It's turning on the receptors in the cervix. The cervical fluid or the white flow is coming out of the cervix for a good 5 days. And that shows a good, healthy, growing follicle with a good, healthy, growing level of estrogen in the blood. And then bam, estrogen peaks and drops. And that peak and drop will trigger LH, the luteinizing hormone, which will turn that sort of firm-like follicle into a softer yellow raisin. And the egg can, you know, rupture out of it and travel down the fallopian tube. And then you want the rule of five again, 5 days times two, 2.5 to 3. So you want a nice healthy range of anywhere from 10 to 16 days post-ovulation. And that shows that that yellow raisin, that corpus luteum, is pumping out progesterone in a good healthy way. And it has ample amounts. So you maintain your cycle without a bleed, without spotting. And then if you're not pregnant, you have your bleed about, you know, anywhere from 10 to 15 days after ovulation. And so this, you want to make these real-time observations. So we teach our, like you do, you teach your clients wiping observations, and then you record the most fertile sign of the day if you have white flow at the end of the day. You're recording dry days. So you want those biomarkers. So without even taking a blood test, if someone has 2 days of bleed, low hormones. If someone has 1 or 2 days of white flow, low hormones. If someone has a short post-peak phase, less than 10 days, low hormones. Mm-hmm. See, when I was at school, when I was at naturopathic school, it was so funny. This was between 1998 and 2002, estrogen dominance. Estrogen was the enemy, estrogen dominance. And then since I was practicing for 20 years, estrogen, there's estrogen, you know, not enough estrogen out there. I don't see a lot of white flow in my previous patients. And I see a short post-peak phase.
Yeah.
So it's a wonderful, wonderful, you know, roadmap. And you can get a lot of information just by having the woman chart.
Mm-hmm. And then you can start to, you know, if you know what your white flow typically looks like month in and month out, when you do have maybe something that looks a little more yellow or chunky, you know, you're maybe thinking low-grade infection, which for a lot of our fertility patients can be a sign of some inflammation going on in the pelvis, or could be a problem down the road. If they do become pregnant, we want to monitor for these types of occult infections. And so that's another way that you can use the chart. And also in our breastfeeding moms who want to space out their pregnancies, we're going to teach them how to chart for that cervical mucus, because you're going to ovulate before you have a period again, right? So to help women own their bodies and feel good about it and not be afraid or worried or have to rely on chemical intervention. There's so many applications to the chart that I think are, you know, so beneficial. And it's just awareness. You know, you're not paying an app for an app or paying for pee sticks that are not oftentimes reliable. You know, Nora always says that your LH test is like the dinner guest that is annoyingly early or annoyingly late, you know? So, you know, it's like a fair weather friend. It's not always going to come. I just had a patient the other day who said, you know, when I was doing cycle monitoring, they would show me when I would release my egg, but my pee strips would never become positive. And she never had positive pee strips. So her LH was just not, again, that critical mass high enough to show up in her urine. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean she wasn't ovulating, but her urine test was completely unreliable.
This comes up a lot. Like it's just the conversation that's happening about fertility. It's like when a woman is starting to think about it, she reads online, you got to buy these LH strips. That's how you're going to track it. That's how you're going to start trying. But do you guys find that with the clients you work with that sometimes it's a little bit of like a psychological game because there's a dependence on these strips that it makes them not factor in like their own body signs. So what would you say to the woman who might be like, but I need to use these signs because that's what I know about?
Well, yeah, there are, I think you can say with confidence, if you had zero mucus, if you were dry, then maybe you want to consider an LH strip. And I know that some doctors will recommend that because what then you're looking for is not so much ovulation and rupture, but you're looking for the potential growth in the follicle, and you can create an ovulatory event because if you have enough LH, it will luteinize that unruptured follicle, and you can have something called a LUF, a luteinized unruptured follicle. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And meaning, so the cycle will be more than 25 days. It'll be like a regular length cycle, but they're dry. And then that case, it's very treatable. But that for me is like the best scenario for LH. Otherwise, you got to trust yourself and start doing wiping observations. And, you know, I was trained in the Creighton model, and we were taught to teach soft sensation, observation, finger test. So sensation is, what do you feel when you're wiping? Close your eyes. Just what do you feel? Mm-hmm. Is it draggy? Because if you're just urinating that day and you're dry, then urine is acidic. It's going to be a bit draggy when you're wiping from front to back. Ah, but then estrogen's rising. You have the slippery sensation. Well, describe it. It's easier to wipe. It's faster. You slide. Good. Mm-hmm. Those are good words. And then you open your eyes. What's on the toilet paper to tissue? And is there anything there? And finger test, can you stretch it? And with the stretch, you're looking for height. And you're looking for color. And with that experience, you're experiencing your days of infertility or fertility in what I call a 3D way. It's multi-sensorial. Mm-hmm. It's feeling, it's visual, it's tactile. And you develop that body literacy by wiping. You have to wipe every day anyway. So you're wiping every day. Just record once, record the most fertile sign of the day at your bedtime.
Yeah.
And you will gain that knowledge. And I don't think an LH strip will cut it for you.
And I have a lot of patients who are very attached to their apps. Well, my app said, and then I'll show them the diagram that we use in our course that shows, you know, you could have a woman with, you know, her peak day, her peak estrogen day on day 10, one cycle, the next cycle, her peak day is day 16. And then the next cycle, her peak day is day 20. And so if you're relying on your app, which shows you data from last month, you're going to miss your window every time. Mm-hmm. And then the point is that we don't want there to be an ick factor or a fear factor around just tuning into your body. I think that's really important because things change month to month. Maybe you had a stressful month. Maybe there was, you know, a time change that messes people up too, right?
Also, I like what you said though. You told me that you did recommend a type of app. It was a recording system.
I just do it on the cheap. I just recommend P Tracker, and I'm not associated with them at all because I like the cute little emojis. I find it very user-friendly for teens because there's like little fun little symbols for like the ovulatory mucus one is like a green blob of mucus. And then there's flexibility because you can just write all of your notes in. You could write peak plus one, you know. And so, you know, that's if it comes to a person not wanting to track period, sometimes an app like that can just get them in the habit of taking notes every day.
Mm-hmm. So the point is, I think the value of that is that the woman's in charge and she's making real-time observations.
Yes.
And she's dominating the app. The app is not dominating her.
Exactly.
So, but you have to coach them along, I think, in that sense. But
I remember when I was first in practice, I loved LH strips. I sold them in packs of 10, you know, on the cheap kind of thing. Don't buy the Shoppers Drug Mart one, buy mine. But now I don't even use them at all. I don't even know the last time we ordered any of them in, you know, so it's really more about the chart as your most flexible tool.
Is there a situation where you could get, you know, false positives from LH strips that women should know about?
Well, you know, because it's pulsatile. It's a pulsatile hormone. So you're going to have ebbs and flows, and particularly for women who've got multiple follicles happening at once, they're all getting recruited at once, like in PCOS. You might have someone who's going to tell you on day 26 that they're still having slippery discharge. It's like, am I ovulating again? Well, no, but you're getting all these little signals from all these little baby follicles that are trying to erupt, right? Okay. And so, yeah, this pulsatile nature of LH, like you could be just hitting it 10 hours too early and it's in a dip. And you should have tested it, you know, 5 hours later and it would have risen again and you would have seen that positive. Remember that it's got to be flushed out into the urine before it makes it into your urine test. So if there's not enough of that critical mass in your bloodstream, you're not going to see it in your urine. Mm-hmm. So it's a tricky thing, you know.
I like middle of the month pain. I find that, you know, women will start observing that little twinge, bing. It's like a you know, bing.
I literally like that. Bing. Yeah. Great sound effect.
Yeah. I know, she does it so well.
Because it's, you know, because the ovaries have, you know, an ovarian vein, an ovarian artery, and ovarian nerves. So the rupture, just by breaking and rupturing the shell of the follicle, will rub against the nerve and will have a nanosecond, maybe 3 seconds mm-hmm. of nerve pain. And you don't want it longer than that, because if it's longer, that means the rupture is like trying to happen, not happening, and just ain't happening. Mm-hmm. But for a few seconds, boom, that means you had a good rupture. And I think that's a very important biomarker, yeah. is looking for that middle of month pain, that lower abdominal pain on the left or on the right, or lower mm-hmm. quadrant pain.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we've talked about cervical mucus and how it's a really good biomarker and sign of fertility. Nora, you mentioned about the ovulation pain. Are there any other biomarkers or charting signs and signals that you guys use?
Absolutely. So you want the 5 days of red bleed. That's really important. Mm-hmm. And you want the color, as I mentioned before, red or burgundy. If you have spotting before your period, that could indicate low progesterone. And if you have spotting after your period, that can indicate just, you know, a slight infection. Basically, you know, you've had sort of irregular periods or irregular hormone levels, and you're not getting a good flow. And you can have a buildup of necrotic tissue in the lining of your uterus. So at the end of your period, it's like drip, 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 drip. It's just little brown spots. So you really want to address that. Mm-hmm. But if it's 5 days of red flow, 5 days of white flow, and a stable post-peak phase, that's a good cycle. And mm-hmm. that's what we aspire to, basically.
And then another layer to this, again, it's not necessary, and it's not necessarily something I advocate all the time. But if a woman is really not sure about this idea of her fertile window, meaning like she's not really maybe confident checking her cervical fluid, or she's not really tuning in well, and she's open to the idea, you could add in temperature charting. So basal body temperature charting, which is you're checking oral temperature or vaginal temperature, never armpit or temporal or skin. We want in the mouth, or if they're finding that they're mouth breathers, or perhaps they're getting up too much in the night, then vaginal temperature can work as well. But that first reading, the minute your eyes open and before you move from your bed, and we want to do that for just one cycle so that you can see sort of this biphasic pattern. And when there's irregularities in that pattern, your temperature should rise after ovulation. That tells us that you've ovulated. Period doesn't mean that hormone level for progesterone is sustained unless you get that nice, consistent, elevated temperature for the full post-peak phase. It could drop off. You could have this sort of up and down sawtooth pattern that tells us that maybe there's not enough of that nice, stable hormone level to carry you through. So that could add another layer as well. But that stable post-peak phase, you know, 12 to 14 days, 10 to 16 days, I like to see around 12 to 14 days is month in, month out is generally what we want to see, because that means that your corpus luteum is stable too.
Mm-hmm. So moving along from the cycle charting, you guys work a lot with fertility. And so as you mentioned earlier, fertility is complex in that it involves many layers. So if you were to give your top three pieces of advice for a woman who's trying to conceive, what would it be?
Well, definitely cycle charting.
Aside from cycle charting. Oh, okay.
Okay. Have we not driven that home enough?
Yeah, no, right. No, I think you want to then do blood work. You want to do blood work that's properly timed with your cycle. So cycle day 3 and then peak plus 7. And then in turn, you know, do an ultrasound series timed during your white flow days or your cervical fluid days. And then, you know, what's happening on your blood work? So again, we've talked about anemia. In my practice, I saw anemia in 90% of my infertility patients. So mm-hmm. you have to address absorption, you know, whether you're using plant-based forms of iron or meat-based, you want to absorb it properly. So you want to help your digestion, absorb the nutrients properly. Are you getting out in the sun? You need vitamin D. Low vitamin D is so correlated to so many types of infertility. And then also in my practice, a history of asthma, eczema, psoriasis, so a lot of allergies. Allergies can hinder fertility. Mm-hmm. So you want to help your allergies, for heaven's sakes. And because it's a strain, histamine competes with hormones, basically. It's just a quick way of saying it. Mm-hmm. And you want to, so I get all geeky here. There's something called cyclic AMP, which is what you want to raise. And that can manage your eczema, asthma, psoriasis, allergies, and even diabetes and high blood pressure. All these things can hinder fertility. Mm-hmm. So we teach our students what herbs to prescribe their patients to help raise cyclic AMP. And by getting rid of the psoriasis, getting rid of the allergies, women can not only get pregnant, but then maintain a pregnancy. And it's part and parcel. It's not just the ovary and the white flow. It's the whole body. So those are some of my observations.
And then I'm sure the allergies too, the gut allergies, when you work through that, then you're able to absorb your vitamins a bit better, such mm-hmm. as your iron. So you're also helping that aspect of your treatment.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. The digestive system is always tweaking a balance between TH1 and TH2. So if you're in balance, have a lack of balance, you're going to have a propensity either for autoimmune conditions on the one hand or seasonal allergies on the other, which of course will hinder fertility. So
I always tell my patients that your fertility is an extension of your healthy physiology, right? Like if you're standing in your kitchen and there's like a crazy fire going on in your living room and you're like, oh, that's cool, and you just go back to doing your dishes. No, like your body has to attend to that first. Mm-hmm. So I say, you know, fertility is nice, but it's survival first. So if you're fully inflamed, you know, you've got crazy hormonal acne, you're only sleeping 4 hours a night, you're eating tons of processed food, you're trying to survive on caffeine, you know, all these things have to be taken care of before you even go digging around for the hormones. Because all that is showing you is that your hormones are, you know, just an extension of all these other things that are creating inflammation. So you've got to deal with, you know, are you getting good bowel movements? Are you getting a decent amount of sleep that you're waking up feeling good? Do you feel like you have enough time for self-care and movement? And these are things that don't happen overnight, which is why, you know, in my ideal world, we want to give a woman or a couple at least 3-4 months of work before they even start to plan for pregnancy. That's not often what we get to have, right? We have patients, I'm sure you know, who come into your office and my IVF transfers tomorrow. Can you help me? You know, you always want to help your patient, but, you know, this is not the ideal way to restore fertility properly in a way that is in the best interest of the woman all the time, right? Mm-hmm. So that's our sort of grand planetary mission, is we want cycle awareness to happen in women when they're just starting their period, right from teens. That's our beautiful goal. We can address dysmenorrhea or menstrual pain. We can address menstrual migraines. We can address hormonal acne in a more gentle way. And then we're building on fertility with good lifestyle habits that take time to form.
Mm-hmm. This is why I love when the woman comes. My ideal patient is the woman who's in her early 20s. She's been on birth control for a long time. And she's like, I want to come off. I'm not ready for kids just yet, but I want to get everything sorted out before it's time.
Yep.
And you're just like, good for you. Ready to get empowered. Like, you know, it's a good exactly. place to be.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, I was involved with the Fertility Care Center in Toronto for many years. And it was so interesting. Cycle charting, when it came to Toronto in 1981, and I was told by the executive director at the time that back then, most couples wanted cycle charting for birth control to space out their next pregnancy. Mm. And then the numbers started shifting.
Yeah.
And by the time I got involved with Fertility Care Toronto, this would have been in 2010. 95% of people there were using cycle charting for getting pregnant, trying to get pregnant.
Right.
So we've had decades and decades and decades of the pill getting into the water supply, the metabolites of these fake hormones getting to the water supply. And good old Denmark has done a lot of research on male fertility, and they've seen a big drop in sperm counts in men. And I can't help but wonder that with all these artificial hormones, it's not only helped contribute to falling sperm counts, but also falling ovulation rates. And so the sooner the better. I mean, because the irony is these girls are put on the pill because they don't want to get pregnant, but were they fertile to begin with? And right. We don't know. And because we're not taught the rule of five, do you have 5 days of red flow, 5 days of white flow, stable post-peak phase? So I think the sooner the better. I think, yeah.
You know, and you know, our public service announcement to parents with teenage girls who are, you know, wanting, you know, there's girls who are desperate to be on the birth control pill because they want their skin cleared up and they don't want to feel any pain whatsoever. They don't want to deal with the PMS, but they don't know that there is a cost. And one of the costs is its impact on bone density. Mm-hmm. You know, there's this sort of beautiful critical window of time when you're between the ages of 16 and 20 to lay down adequate amounts of bone matrix to really strengthen your bone density. Because after that, it doesn't matter how much calcium or vitamin D that you take, you're only going to be able to maintain what you got. Mm-hmm. So if you shortchange yourself during that time, then you have this huge risk of osteoporosis later in life. Mm-hmm. And there is also this idea that it could potentially risk ovarian failure later in life because you've not given the body enough time to establish a healthy hormonal rhythm. And that was me. You know, I went on the pill in my 20s at very, very heavy doses to sort out acne. Unfortunately, it didn't even work for me. The dermatologist would be like, oh, that's weird. You're like the 0.1% of patients that it doesn't work for, you know. And after that, you know, I wish I had looked into it more because I was probably the prime candidate for somebody never to be on the pill because I had irregular cycles. I had all these things. And when I came off the pill, I had the worst post-pill amenorrhea. I didn't have a bleed for almost 2 years. And I grew hair on my chin and in other weird, funky places that I will not mention here. and it was just wasn't good.
Wasn't pretty.
You know, and you know, maybe I have that to thank for the journey that led me to doing what I'm doing now. But I'm very passionate about helping families navigate this because there is a cost to the pill. It's just not a magic pill for everybody, you know?
You know, going back to, you know, I always think like what I would tell my teenage self, and I try to bring that to conversations that I get to have in my office with some young women. But I'm finding there's a bit of a shift happening with society right now. And like young women are asking questions about the pill.
Yes.
Or they're hearing stories from their friends like, oh, I went on it and like I got really depressed and my moods were off and I really didn't feel good. And so there's like more of that chatter. Whereas I feel like when I was growing up, it was like, oh, your doctor put you on it. You don't say anything. Nobody really discussed it.
True.
But now there's more pushback, which I mean, yay, women and society and this like movement to having a more, to being more empowered. But yeah.
I definitely saw a shift. I mean, so back to the Fertility Care Toronto, like I said, it was mostly couples wanting the cycle chart because they're ready to space out the pregnancy or start a family. But by 2017-18, more and more women in their 20s and teens were interested in getting off the pill and getting it off entirely. And so I did see that shift, come to think of it. So I'm optimistic. It's a lot different than 1998. That's for sure.
Okay. Let's go back to progesterone because this is a hot topic for, you know, not only fertility, but you know, whenever I feel like whenever you see signs in your cycle, women are like, oh, it's my progesterone. But I also have come across with a lot of debate with this. So, you know, Jessica, sure. I'm sure like working in integrated fertility, you see some of the insanely high doses that they're prescribing women through conventional care. So I just want to ask you guys, like, is there a right dosage? How do you go about knowing which form of progesterone you need or even that you need it? Like, what are your conversations with patients or clients?
How you know, it it's interesting. I find sometimes there's a deficiency of adequate prescribing actually with, or they're sort of stuck on an algorithmic protocol, whereas at, you know, every clinic seems to be a little bit different, but I'll have one patient who's on high dose suppository and oral and injections, maybe and cream, you know, and then there's another patient of mine who's on too low of a dose. And the common thing that is happening is that nobody is testing their progesterone levels in early pregnancy. And I'm like, why? why wouldn't you do that? Don't you want to know if their endemic levels are adequate to sustain the pregnancy? You know, so if she's had a lot of preconception signs, i.e. short post-peak phase, i.e. temperatures drop off, i.e. lots of premenstrual brown bleeding, certainly previous early miscarriage.
And PMS.
Thank you.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You know, so the answer is test. You have to test. You have to see what her levels are.
And sorry, properly timed tests, you know, peak plus seven. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So that's very, very important. But also I think progesterone, you know, if you weren't cycle charting and before you got pregnant, you weren't being flagged for the potential problems that you could experience during pregnancy, because there's a big correlation with low progesterone and all kinds of obstetrical emergencies like premature rupture of membrane, placenta previa, miscarriage, preterm birth.
Yep.
So, and then also pregnancy induced hypertension.
Yep.
So, and I mentioned hypertension because it goes back to cyclic AMP. And, you know, I'm glad you say it's not just about progesterone. Of course, as naturopathic doctors, we're very pro progesterone, but what's going to hinder progesterone in the body? Again, eczema, psoriasis, asthma, allergies, high blood pressure, diabetes, multiple sclerosis, some forms of epilepsy, some forms of lupus are going to antagonize progesterone in the body. Mm-hmm. So it's mandatory that you really want to treat, like you said, you know, at least three cycles or 90 days, mm-hmm. address those conditions because they're going to hinder your natural production of progesterone. Mm-hmm. And I believe what I see in my practice, when women cleared up their skin, especially from psoriasis, they maintained their pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And so of course you want to test progesterone throughout pregnancy. That's not done in too many places in North America. If you've had a miscarriage, you should be monitoring progesterone throughout pregnancy. But what were the conditions you had that would antagonize progesterone to begin with? And as naturopathic doctors, we connect the dots, we look at the whole person, and we don't just, you know, give based on symptoms. So low progesterone is just a one test. What's causing it? I mean, that was very exciting. And that's what we teach our students.
Nora, you're an expert in epilepsy as well. So what Nora isn't sharing, because she's very modest, is that she would see, you know, these patients who would have cyclical flares of their seizures. And she would piece that together and figure out that it oftentimes had something to do with low progesterone, which is kind of awesome.
The chart would reveal it. The chart would reveal a lot of spotting, premenstrual mm-hmm. brown bleeding and
PMS
and also a regular post-peak phase. So you didn't need a blood test, but it's good to get a number, because back to dosage, you know, we recommend to our students that they start at about 200 milligrams a day. Mm-hmm. And in some cases you might need as much as 1200 milligrams a day. But the thing is, you want to keep charting. Keep charting. Mm-hmm. What does the chart reveal? So good, you're staying pregnant. That's a very good sign. No cramping, very good sign.
And you're not giving progesterone all cycle long or for 14 days mm-hmm. or for cycle day 12 to 24, as I've seen some courses teach.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's peak plus 3 to 12. You have to follow physiologically where your progesterone ebbs and flows. There's a natural crescendo and decrescendo mm-hmm. for progesterone. And we're not trying to supersede what the body is supposed to be doing on its own. We're just trying to follow that along to get more of that benefit for the patient.
Yeah. Even well-intentioned, educated, talented practitioners still have this 28-day bias.
Yeah.
And for me, it's top-down practice. You want to build a practice bottom-up. Every woman is unique and individual, and her cycle will be unique and individual. I mean, we talk about diversity, but boy, there's a lot of fear about diversity in a woman's cycle. Give me a break.
Right.
You know, diversity is beautiful.
Yeah.
And actually, it's subtle. And actually, if you see those biomarkers month in, month out, the variability is natural and you understand it and you're not afraid. There's That's no right. scary days when you're cycle charting. Right. There's no safe or unsafe days or better or bad days. Every day is a valuable day.
Yes.
You have days of infertility and you have days of fertility month in, month out.
And you can look forward to both sides of things. Right? You talk about having spice in a couple, you should have spice every day. And there are days where, you know, you don't have to be worried about fertility. You could take fertility off the table and really focus on the relationship and the connection.
Mm-hmm. Right. So Nora, you had mentioned about testing progesterone on peak plus 7. So in the event of a pregnancy, what's the frequency that you would test the progesterone after that to ensure that the levels are staying optimal within the first trimester?
Sure. So it depends on the woman. If she's had a history of miscarriage, you want to test it every 2 weeks. You want to stay on top of it. Mm-hmm. And then in the second and third trimester, you can spread it out to every 3 weeks. But you definitely want to monitor throughout pregnancy. And this is where our trained, you know, students are different. They're going to be supporting and advocating for women to test their progesterone throughout pregnancy. And there's a very important reason for this. Again, there's a bias in obstetrics is that the placenta does everything. Well, no. Mm-hmm. To maintain a pregnancy, you need three organs working. You need the placenta, you need one ovary without the corpus luteum, and you need the other ovary with the corpus luteum. And the ovary with the corpus luteum is pumping out twice as much progesterone than the other, than the placenta and the other ovary, twice as much. So if you were struggling with fertility before, you can assume that that corpus luteum, you know, that was pumping out the progesterone, you know, during your conception could be underperforming because you've been struggling with fertility. So it is safe to assume that it's going to be underperforming throughout pregnancy. That will put you at risk of a preterm birth because it just, you're not producing that critical mass to maintain the lining of the uterus. And so that's where we're different. You really want to advocate, and especially if they had eczema, psoriasis, asthma, high blood pressure,
inflammation,
diabetes, inflammation, autoimmune, you know, and so absolutely you have to support progesterone and monitor it.
So you always hear that the, you know, placenta is going to kick in and make all the progesterone you need at 12 weeks. And then that's when you stop. But I've been seeing in my practice, like the women that are having like the later stage miscarriages, like the progesterone really is the foundation. And like maybe they need to continue it through. Have you guys found that as well? That
Have actually a really good case of a woman who delivered her baby at 22 weeks. This child was not meant to survive because at that stage, and it wasn't cervical incompetence, there was nothing genetically wrong with the baby. She just gave birth at 22 weeks and he was this tiny, tiny little thing. And we had her on extended progesterone. We kept going with it because her levels just, you know, weren't great. And she had very, very short luteal phases prior to conceiving. So we had kept her on it. We were getting ready to test her again at 20 weeks, I think it was. And then she delivered at 22 weeks and he survived. He survived.
But you were saying that her doctor, her other doctor, her doctor told her to stop taking the progesterone.
Well, initially, but then after she delivered, they told her that he was so well developed that they thought maybe the progesterone helped.
Oh, it did help.
Yep.
But I thought you told me that the doctor stopped.
As a rule, they tell them to stop.
But then at 12 weeks.
I mean, luckily checked in with me and I said, you know what, let's test. And I just didn't feel good about that. So we just decided, because there's no harm, right? It's a hormone your body's pumping out anyway. And you're using bioidentical progesterone. It's human identical. And in those types of situations, it can be devastating for a woman to have to deliver, you know, a woman who loses her child at 5 months, she is going into labor. She's delivering a baby and is devastating for them. And why not just test and make sure that those levels are adequate?
Yeah. Test, don't guess.
Exactly.
Oh, another thing I think that's important with charting is that some women could have a watery discharge and it's not lubricative. It's not slippery, but that's a sign of infection. And it could be group B strep, or it could be E. coli. It could be a lot of anaerobic infections as well. Mm-hmm. And that can bring on premature contractions because you could go to the ER and you're in labor at 7 months, let's say, and the tocolytic therapy or the anti-contraction medicine is not working. You need to give that woman antibiotics because the antibiotics will help clear the infection. And then the lining of the uterus will calm down and you can finish the pregnancy. So that's, again, you want to be charting throughout pregnancy, making those wiping observations every day because, you know, in women who miscarry or have preterm birth have a lot of infections, a lot of microbes in their endometrial fluid and in their umbilical cord fluid as well.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, wonderful, ladies. We had a jam-packed content episode with such good information. Thank you so much for sharing.
So fun, always. Any chance we get to talk about cycle charting is our favorite kind of day. So thank you for having us on.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel about cervical mucus. Talk about it any day, anytime.
There we go.
And our website is www.fertilityce.com, mm-hmm. and we outline our course there. So
thank you. Yeah, we've had over 200 doctors from all over North America take our course. So these are now doctors trained in our restorative method and cycle charting. You know, so if anyone out there is, you know, looking for a practitioner, we now have built up a great referral network as well. So just wanted to throw that out there. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's really helpful because I know listeners are probably thinking to themselves, how do I find a doctor that's going to test my progesterone on the right days, right? Mm-hmm. So having a database is going to be really helpful. All right. Well, thank you, ladies, for being here and sharing everything that you know. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, Dr. Antoinette.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the Hormone Heartbeat podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe so you can be notified of all future episodes. And don't forget to check out the show notes for all guest details and your free downloadable goodies. Your feedback is important to me, so please, please leave a review so women can find and be empowered by this knowledge. If you have a topic you'd like to see discussed on the show or have a recommendation for guests you'd like to see interviewed, please get in touch by emailing thehormoneheartbeatpodcast@gmail.com.